tell us about the moduli of vacua and categorical representations.
Thank you. It's a great pleasure to be in this amazing place. Very excited to be here. And yeah, so I wanted to tell you about some work that Sam Gunningham and I have been doing, motivated by some problems in geometric representation theory and some problems about cohomology of character varieties. So my plan is to try to explain some of the motivating problems and maybe state the theorem, and then I'd like to get to the more speculative physics interpretation part. Speculative only because I don't understand it. But, okay, so what's my setting? So we're going to start with, for me, G, is this work, is this visible enough? No. Okay, I don't know if this, some are better than others. Okay, so G is gonna be a complex, for me, always complex reductive group. So in other words, a complexification of a compact Lie group. I'd like to think about the notion of a Hamiltonian G space. What does it mean to have a Hamiltonian G space? And again, everything I'm going to be doing is going to be doing complex algebraically or holomorphically. So by a Hamiltonian G space, I mean I have a space X, which is holomorphic symplectic. Or you could do a Poisson version. So I have a holomorphic symplectic space X, and it has an action of the group G, but it also carries a Poisson map, the moment map, to the dual of the Lie algebra, giving the Hamiltonians, and this map is equivariant for the action of the group. Okay, so this is, and moreover, the Hamiltonians here generate the action of G. Okay, so this is kind of the setup for holomorphic symplectic space. I'd like to rewrite this in another way. Another way to write this is to say that I have a space X. Maybe I'll just kind of rotate the picture. I'll think of X as a space with a map to little G dual. And over little G dual, there's something which is the cotangent bundle of G. So if you look at the cotangent bundle of G, it has two projections to G dual, the left and right ones. And together they make T star of G into a groupoid. A groupoid acting on G dual. So this is just another way of saying the coadjoint action. I have, here's my G dual, and I have the groupoid of the coadjoint action means, given any two points in G dual, I put arrows between them for elements in the group taking one to another. Okay, so that's this is the source and target arrows for this groupoid. And so another way of saying that I have a Hamiltonian G space is to say I have a space over G dual with an action of this groupoid. So in other words, I have the fiber of X at over one point, and I have a fiber of X over another point, and every element of G gives me lifts to a map. So I have an action of this groupoid that's compatible with a symplectic structure. Okay. All right, so that's how I want to think about a Hamiltonian G space. Now, if you have a groupoid, or if you have an action, you can think about the quotient. So you look at the space of orbits, let's do kind of the most pleasant or naive version of quotient. If I look at the Cartan mod W, which is, look at G star, look at the affine quotient of G star by G. So this is spec of the ring of functions on G star, which are invariant under the group. This space, I don't know, representation theorists like to call it a fractor C, but I can't really draw a fractor very well. So I'm just going to write H star, and the mod for here, me just means I'm not thinking about a stacky quotient. I'm just thinking this is just a variety, an affine space. Okay, so this map is taking the, if you like, the characteristic polynomial, taking the coefficients of the characteristic polynomial. So if I have a Hamiltonian G space, then I can think not just of the moment map, but I can project it down all the way to H star mod W. And this gives me a bunch of functions on X. So this produces a homomorphism from this ring of polynomials. So this ring looks like, you know, polynomials in the fundamental invariant polynomials in the Lie algebra, coefficients of the characteristic polynomial. So I have a map from this ring of polynomials, rank many polynomials, to functions on X. And these maps all, these functions all Poisson commute. So this picture gives me a big source. Whenever I have a Hamiltonian G-space, I have a big source. I have rank many Poisson commuting functions. So this, now by construction, these rank many Poisson commuting functions are also invariant under the group G. So if you'd like, I don't need to take the space X. I could take the space X and do to it all kinds of bad stuff. I could take a Hamiltonian reduction by any subgroup of G at any value of a moment map. So anything you can make out of the G, actually, let's just say, take a Hamiltonian reduction by some subgroup at some coadjoint orbit, various things. These spaces all carry these same Poisson commuting functions. And so this is a big source. This is kind of the, I think, primary source of classical integrable systems. So we always have a bunch of Poisson commuting functions. If I arrange the space to have the right dimension, I might find an actual integrable system. Okay. So, all right, so that's the picture. Now, what can you do with this? So constant is kind of the main figure behind much of what I want to say. So constant in his study of the Toda integrable system, a special case of this kind of construction, in the case of the study of the Toda system and in other works, he emphasized the role of something which I'll call J, for lack of great notation. What is J? J has many names, so it's called the group scheme of regular centralizers. Now, what is the group scheme of regular centralizers? Well, first of all, it's a symplectic manifold with this map. This basically is the phase space of the Toda lattice. It's some completion of the phase space of the Toda lattice. So this is going to be a particular integrable system over the same base, but that's not how I want to think about it. It's a family, in fact, it's a flat family of abelian, the flat in particular, equidimensional family of abelian groups over Cartan mod W. And what are these groups? These are the groups of regular centralizers. So if I give you a point in here, let's say call it lambda, the fiber J sub lambda, what is the fiber J sub lambda? It's the you can think about it as the centralizer of an element of any element X in G dual, which is regular. So I think of an element which is a regular element in G dual. What does regular mean? Regular, for example, means that the dimension of its centralizer is the rank. So if X is, for example, X could be a regular semi-simple, could have distinct eigenvalues. That's a good regular element. And then the fiber would be J sub lambda would be isomorphic to C star to the rank, would be a maximal torus.
What's
the
difference between X and lambda?
Right. So X is anything. So here, X is something in here, and lambda is something in here, which is the image of X. So the claim is that this is actually well-defined, canonically well-defined. If I give you any two, there's a canonical isomorphism between the corresponding groups. And maybe a less obnoxious way of doing it is just to say that the constant also introduced a section of this map. And you could just think of the centralizers of elements in the constant section. So it's just a family of centralizers on the constant section. Okay, so that's maybe a better way to say it. But So J is a commutative family of rank dimensional groups, which are the centralizers of regular elements. For example, if G is GL1, then my space Cartan mod W is just C, invariant polynomials of a 1x1 matrix, and then the space J is the cotangent bundle of C, where the fibers are C stars. Okay, so that's the GL1 version of J.
Do you mean the cotangent bundle or C star times C?
T star of C star, thank you. Yeah, C star times C. So T star of C star. So I want to think of T star C star, but with this polarization. Another example, maybe a little more interesting, if G is SL2, then the centralizer of, say, a regular element, let me just say J lambda where lambda is a regular semi-simple, it just looks like C star. So if you have a, that's just a maximal torus of your group. But the centralizer of a regular nilpotent, of something which is, well, J sub 0, is the centralizer of a regular nilpotent matrix, a regular matrix with a zero characteristic polynomial, which looks like C, but two copies of C. Yeah. With plus minus 1. OK. All right, so that's my. So in particular, these fibers are not connected in general. That's interesting and important. But OK, so this is a nice family of groups. And in particular, and it's symplectic, as you can see here. It's an interesting integrable system. In physics, this space is very familiar. The J is just the Coulomb branch of pure 3D n equals 4 super Young Mills, or the space of monopoles. SU2 monopoles. Okay. All right. So that's what this space J is. So okay. So now what? Why am I introducing J? There's a beautiful. Any questions? No. So there's a beautiful construction due to Ingo. So you call it Ingo's lemma. So this is the fundamental lemma in the proof of the fundamental lemma. What Ingo observed is that there exists a canonical homomorphism. Let me say it from regular centralizers to centralizers. So what do I mean by this? If I have a generic element of the Lie algebra, it has its centralizer, which is also one of these regular centralizers. If I have an element of the Lie algebra which is not regular, I have two groups associated to it. Its honest centralizer and the thing that lives over its image down here. So here, if you'd like, in this picture, if you forget about all these funny maps, you can just look at little loops. Inside of T star of G, there's the inertia. The inertia group is for every element here. You look at the elements of G that are its centralizer. Okay, so just look at loops at fixed points. That's the inertia. So for every point in G dual, I have I sub x is just its centralizer in G of x. And so Ingo says that there's a canonical homomorphism from J, if you'd like J sub chi of x to I sub x. Or if you'd like, from the pullback under the characteristic polynomial map of the group scheme J to the group scheme I. There's a canonical group homomorphism. And what's the construction? It's kind of stupid. You know what it is for regular semi-simple elements. And the complement is codimension 3. And so you just use Hartogs and extend it. So this map is uniquely determined by saying it's an isomorphism on the regular locus. For GLN, you can write down explicitly what this is. It's a nice thing. But for general group G, this is not. There isn't a kind of clear conceptual picture of what this map is.
The centralizer are bigger.
Mm-hmm. They're much bigger.
But the winner makes you true, right?
That's right. Exactly. So for example, over 0, you ask, I'm telling you there's a canonical map from C cross Z mod 2 to the centralized to I sub 0, which is my SL2. Well, what map is going to be? There's only kind of one choice. It's a trivial map. So I never said this was injective. Right? I'm not going to find a canonical copy of this guy right inside of there. So I didn't say it was injective, but there's a unique canonical map determined by this. And the map is much more is not interesting at the trivial at 0, but it is interesting at other points. So
it's almost like I is the classical, not quite.
Yeah, I'll explain this. I think they're both quantum, but they're Coulomb branches for different. They have to do with Coulomb branches for different theories, or different twists. Okay. So this is now what is this construction good for? it gives you something kind of amazing. It's sort of a naive looking thing, but it says that whenever I have a space X of the kind I looked at, I have a space with a Hamiltonian G action, or imagine doing any Hamiltonian reduction of it, any of the kind of things that I'm getting in triple system. So we have this map to Cartan mod W. So we get a bunch of functions, Poisson commuting functions here. So we get a bunch of flows. What Ngo's construction gives you is a canonical integration of those flows. So there's an action of this group J on X. So J is a group scheme. It's a family of groups over H mod W. So if you take the fiber of a particular point here, there's a group there. And that group acts on X. It's exactly the right dimension. And it exactly acts in a way that integrates the flows of the Hamiltonian system. So it's saying that any Hamiltonian system that you get this way can be canonically integrated algebraically as an action of this particular symplectic group. So that's an immediate corollary of Ngo's construction. Generically, there's no problem. It's just the action of the torus. But this is saying something very interesting at complicated fibers. In particular, what Ngo, we'll return to this later. This has a natural physics meaning, too. This is going to be the statement that this Coulomb branch of pure n equals 4 will act on the Coulomb branches of other gauge theories, other n equals 4 gauge theories, integrating the flows, which, again, you can see directly. But this is a general construction. And what Ngo did with this is he used this to prove the fundamental lemma. He did this construction in the case of the Hitchin system. He applies this in the case of the Hitchin integrable system. And there he was actually only interested in the cohomology of the fibers. So here you were maybe think of it in some affine cohomology. Then you think of cohomology of singular Hitchin fibers. And he only cared about the action of pi naught, of the groups of components of these. So it's very important for him that this had two components. So this is where endoscopy comes from. So the fact is, it's not just an integration. It's a smart integration. I mean, it's a non-connected integration. So that ends up giving one of the main ingredients in the proof of the fundamental lemma. Okay, so that's Ngo's story. So any questions? Okay, so now I'd like to explain a quantum version of this. Okay, so now I'd like to ask similar questions for quantum integrable systems and solve them. So what's the setup? So now I want to have, I want to have now, instead of a Hamiltonian G space, I want to talk about a quantum Hamiltonian G space. So there are many ways to define this. Let me, what I mean, well, first of all, by quantum space, you can take various things like some category. Let me just, for example, take an associative algebra. That's going to be my version of non-commutative space. And maybe you think of this associative algebra. So A is going to be some associative algebra. And for example, you think about this as the algebra of differential operators on a space M, where before my X was maybe the cotangent bundle of M. So I quantize the cotangent bundle as algebra of differential operators. And so now I want to quantize the action of the group G. I could just say I have an action of G on the algebra A. But I want to quantize the Hamiltonian structure. I want to quantize the fact that I have a moment map. And so you can write it exactly the same way. You just write the same things, just reverse the arrows. I want to give the moment map becomes a homomorphism now instead of from functions on G-dual. It goes from the enveloping algebra to A. And this should be equivariant. Okay. So that's the kind of what I mean by a quantum Hamiltonian G-space. You can also say it how I actually think about them is a little differently. So you can think of it, equivalently, what this means is that you have a category C, which is the category of A modules. Think of them as some B brains on some slightly non-commutative space. And this category carries a monoidal action, the category of D modules on the group G. So maybe I don't want to emphasize this point of view. This is an equivalent way of saying this data. So it's a module. So this is in the title, there was a notion of categorical representation. This is a particular notion of what it means for a group G to act on a category. So here the category is A modules, and the group G is acting in this Hamiltonian way. Okay. All right. So that's going to be my setup for a quantum. And again, you should think of differential operators on a G space. The example, if group G acts on M, then modules for differential operators on G space are one of my quantum Hamiltonian spaces. So that's kind of the main example I have in mind. Okay, so now what's the analog of this? I guess I shouldn't erase it. What's the analog of this kind of story? There's an analog of everything on this board. In particular, instead of getting a map from this ring of functions, you have an analog, which is the center of the enveloping algebra, which is, if you'd like, kind of things in the enveloping algebra that commute with the group G. There's a homomorphism, that's the moment map, that's just coming from the UG action. There's a map to A. So I have a commuting collection of operators, a commutative algebra of elements in A. So now Harishchandra actually describes this. This algebra that we're getting is the same algebra we had before. The algebra of the center of the enveloping algebra hasn't changed. It's again isomorphic to functions on this space Cartan mod W. So I have let me call it as polynomials in some generators. Maybe I'll change the notation to suggest Laplace operators. And this is the source of the Harishchandra system. If I take, say, a G space, maybe think of a symmetric space, and I have a if I have a symmetric space and I look inside of differential operators on the symmetric space, I have a collection of commuting and G invariant differential operators. So in particular, they descend to say G mod K mod gamma. So I have a collection of commuting G invariant differential operators, rank many, and these are higher versions of Laplace operators, or wave operators, depending on your signature. Okay, so that's so that's this Harishchandra system. So this is these higher Laplacians. So so what do I mean by Harishchandra system? If I give you a bunch of commuting operators, you should look at their joint eigenfunctions. That's a natural question. You try to look at joint eigenfunctions for all these higher Laplace operators. So you can have this kind of Harishchandra system of differential equation. I can look at the module, the A module, where I look at, let's call it M lambda. I look at collections of elements. I'm thinking of them as functions on a symmetric space, but think of them. I look at elements which are joint eigenfunctions of all these operators, where lambda is a lambda, the collection of these lambda I's is again a point in H star mod W. So given a point in H star mod W, I have a joint eigenvalue, I can look at the eigensystem corresponding to them. And these are in some sense the quantum version of kind of fibers of this map. So you pick a point in the base, this is the quantum version of this, these quantum modules. So I have a nice big family of quantum commuting differential operators, and if I arrange my space to be of the right size, this is again a big source of quantum integrable systems. A lot of quantum integrable systems naturally arise from this construction. Okay, so that's all good, but now I want to say there's something a little problematic here. What's problematic is that we want to actually parametrize these fibers, and at least naively, we've constructed these bunch of fibers labeled by points lambda. Well, what you discover is there's actually many fewer of them than you think. Let me try to explain that. You have this homomorphism from Z to A. This is a commutative algebra, and it's mapping into A in G invariant way, but this is not central. So in other words, A is not a Z algebra. It's just a homomorphism from a commutative algebra to A. They don't commute with everything in here. They just commute with each other's. So in other words, if you like, A is not a Z algebra, it's an algebra in Z bimodules. So what does that mean? That means, if you'd like, the non-commutative space, spec A, whatever that means, it doesn't actually live over the space spec of Z, which is H star mod W. You might think that you have a kind of non-commutative space living over the same base, but it doesn't because these are bimodules. And because there's an algebra in bimodules, what it means is that this action of A actually acts on Z. So the different points in Z get identified. So there's some kind of motion along the Z direction. So in other words, you might try to spectrally decompose according to the spectrum of Z, but things don't actually live over this spectrum. So what does that mean concretely? It means, e.g., that these quantum fibers, M sub lambda, we can have isomorphism of quantum fibers at different points. So these fibers are actually get identified, even though you think initially that you've parametrized it. So let me make this very explicit. This is something that's probably familiar to everyone. Let me take my space to be C star.
So the definition of the
Where does F lead? Well, here I'm literally thinking of this as a D module. So I'm thinking of the system. Here I'm thinking of that I'm looking at differential operators. So F is a wannabe function, wannabe solution. So I'm really looking at the module, which is this ring of differential operators, which maybe call it A, which is my ring of differential operators, and you mod out by an ideal del I minus F I. So here I'm trying to solve it, this module in some space of functions, so maybe some space of distributions.
So these are A modules?
Yeah, that's right, these are A modules. that's right, but I'm think of them as they're systems of differential equations, right? I'm trying to solve them.
So they are A modules generated by some vector which solve these equations, and then
They're cyclic modules, and you might try to realize them in some space of functions. You might try to find functions that solve these.
Inside that module, there might be other vectors which satisfy equations for different lambdas.
Yes, that's right, exactly. Yeah, so let me write that this is something very simple, right? If I take my space and my group to be C star, so I'm really quantizing the example of T star of C star. So look at the ring of differential operators. And then what are my modules? My M lambda is I'm looking at the module where I set my invariant vector field on C star is ZDDZ. So I'm saying ZDDZ minus lambda F equals zero. I'm looking at this system of equations. And we know that this system of equations is, or if you'd like, I'm trying to solve the connection, find a flat section of the connection, del minus lambda DZ over Z. And this connection doesn't depend on lambda up to gauge equivalence, it'll depend on lambda up to shift. So I can shift lambda by an integer. So if you like, this m lambda is isomorphic to m lambda plus an integer. The only invariant, the only gauge invariant of this connection is its monodromy. So the monodromy is the exponential, e to the 2 pi I lambda. It doesn't care about this shift. Yeah?
So if I thought very carefully about classical Hamiltonian production, would I have noticed this as like an anchor map or something? This like fact that it doesn't quite live over?
No, if you thought very carefully, it does quite live over in the classical sense. If you thought very carefully about it, what you discovered is exactly this action of stabilizers, that there's an extra symmetry. So this shift, so we'll see this shift, right? You're quantizing T star of C star, right. Thought of living over C, and when you quantize something which is periodic in momentum, you get a shift. So at zero, you have this extra symmetries, which is this group C star acting. When you quantize it, it gives this translate these shift functors, these shift maps.
And it'll always be that this sort of phenomenon is sort of quantum in the old-fashioned sense it comes in quantum?
If you'd like, I could put this, there's an H bar, if you like, in this deformation, and like this lambda. The fact that it comes in quantum is the fact that this group was C star. If my group was C, then the quantize it would be infinitesimal. Would be a shift. So I'm getting shifts because I have C stars. So this means that the true parameter space here, so the true moduli space, or true parameter space, is C up to translations. I'm an algebraic geometer at heart, so this is a little painful for me to write, but I'll do it anyway. I can think of this as C star. But, so the monodromy lives in C star. But the connection, the connection form lambda, lives in C. So really, the space here is a funny algebraic space. It's C modulo the translation action of Z, which algebraically is a different beast than C star. Analytically, though, it's C star. Okay, so that's the parameter space. So well-known phenomena. These Harishchandra systems or these eigensystems depend on lambda up to some kind of shifts. So what they'd like to do is sort of mechanize, explain exactly where these shifts are. What does it actually depend on? Or another way to say it, this non-commutative space, what does it actually live over? So that's sort of the content of the theorem. That's all the theorem is doing. In the case of C star, this is everything the theorem does. So let me state a theorem, again, theorem with Sam Gunningham. And what it says is following is it says that any, let me say it informally first, any Hamiltonian G space, any quantum Hamiltonian G space, so the kind of things we've been talking about, is linear over or lives over not Cartan mod W, but Cartan modulo the affine Weyl group. So I'll have to explain at some point exactly what I mean by this slash slash. But in case of rank of C star, this is exactly my lattice. Okay, so I've gone from C to C mod Z. And again, if you're thinking complex analytically, you can think that what's happened is you've gone from the Lie algebra of the torus to the group, to the torus group. Okay. So that's the statement. So let me say it more precise version of this. There's a symmetric monoidal category. So commutative tensor category. So I don't know, symmetric monoidal, it just means category with a commutative tensor product. Category that I don't know, like to call the constant category. Let me call it K, the constant category. And which is just the quantization of J, which is the deformation quantization of the J we had before. J was a symplectic group, and we're going to quantize it. We're going to get a tensor category. So the first part of this, there's a category that I can define explicitly, but it's, the claim is it's symmetric monoidal. And it looks like, if you'd like, sheaves, quasi-coherent sheaves, if you'd like, on Cartan mod the affine Weyl group with tensor product. So this commutative tensor category, that's the first thing. And there's an action. So then in Go action, then go action, if you'd like, of J on T star of G quantizes to an action, a central action, an action from K to the center of the category of D modules on the group. Okay, so that's there's a central action of this commutative category on of D of G modules. So what does that mean in practice? That means, i.e., whenever you have something like the category of modules of differential equation of some space, like, you know, G mod, you know, I don't know. Okay, I don't know. So let's write some Hamiltonian reduction where M is a G space. Suppose you have a G space and you look at modules over anything like this, it gets a commutative, carries an action of this commutative category K. So it's kind of a categorical version of the Harishchandra operators, saying onto any non-commutative G space or anything reduction of non-commutative space, you have a bunch of commuting operators. That's these tensor, that's action by these, by Cartan mod W. What I'd like to explain is that this theorem and Ngo's theorem, we give a simultaneous proof, a conceptual proof of Ngo's theorem. And there's a simple picture that includes this and its classical limit as one statement. Okay, so that's the kind of story. So this is really a part of the geometric Langlands program in some sense. It's if you'd like the space Cartan mod W, you can think of it as some version. It looks a lot like semi-simple conjugacy classes in this Langlands dual group. It looks, so this is somehow we're saying that categorical representations of the group G have Langlands parameters. We're giving parameters in the sense of Langlands, we're giving conjugacy classes in the dual group to parameterize categorical representations. So that's a perspective I'm not going to emphasize so much, but that's part of the motivation. Okay. So so I guess I could tell you a little bit more about what this category K is, or maybe I could say where maybe I'll go to the physics interpretation. Let's see. And any requests or, I don't know. Yeah, maybe let me just say a little bit about what K is. Let me at least define what K is. So it has several different descriptions. This category K, you can think about it as, maybe just to write the most concrete one, you look at the homology of the affine Grassmannian for the Langlands dual group of G, and you look at the equivariant homology of this, and you look at modules for that. That's just to write a formula on the board. Okay, so it's modules for explicit algebra, which is homology of some affine Grassmannian, which is, on one hand, this tells you exactly that it's the it's line operators. It's a category of line operators in 3D n equals 4 in the omega background. That's just a different mouthful for this mouthful. So if you like, it's quantized. Well, it's what I said before. It's quantized sheaves on the space J, which is this integrable system. But it has several other descriptions. It's also isomorphic to what's called the Whitaker. This is how we initially got to it. It's what you might call the Whitaker-Hecke category, just D modules on the group G, which are equivariant on the left, on the right, for upper triangular matrices against some character. Again, this probably won't make sense unless you've run into these things, so let me just. So what's not clear, so this is a formula. Let me just say again, from the shape of the formula, it's not clear at all that this thing is commutative, and it's also not clear at all why it should act centrally on G. So that's somehow the content from this point of view. So this is a version of Kostin's description of the center of the enveloping algebra. So Kostin proved that the center of the enveloping algebra was kind of a Whitaker Hamiltonian reduction of UG. So this theorem is kind of a categorification of Kostin's theorem. Yeah.
Is from your description as line operators, would I expect it to be symmetric?
No. No, so the reason it's the reason for the kind of commutativity really doesn't have a good explanation in three dimension. It has a natural four dimensional. So I've tried to explain this in physicists several times, and it's always been a disaster. I think partly because I tried to explain it in 3D language. 3D language is kind of a little funny, but it comes very naturally from 4D. It's not lifting to, but they're coming the. Line operators in 4D n equals 2 relate to this, but it's not the same category. It's not the category of line operators in 4D n equals 2, but it's kind of dual to that in some sense. So I'll say what that is. Okay, so this category. So it has several different descriptions, and maybe a more classical name. This is also modules. This algebra is not quite isomorphic to, but it's Morita equivalent to something very concrete, which is called the affine nil-Hecke algebra. And that's where you get the concrete description relating to Cartan mod W affine. So it's modules for a very concrete algebra with concrete presentation. Okay. So that's the kind of general story. Let me say a little bit about the gauge theory context, and then take some of the kind of applications you might want for this. Any questions before I continue? Okay, so I think let me say kind of a gauge theory context for this kind of picture. This story is really about line operators in 4D n equals 4 superangles. If you look at 4D n equals 4 superangles, in particular, this has a topological twisted version. This is studied by Kapustin and Witten, which is called the GL twist. And really, there's kind of two natural versions here, which is maybe what's called psi equals infinity and psi equals 0, which I'll follow. I don't know if this is standard notation of Witten's, but let's call this the B hat model and the A hat model. So there's two different four-dimensional topological field theories. So the B hat model for group G, and I'll look at the A hat model for the group G dual. Electric magnetic duality, S-duality, gives an isomorphism between these two four-dimensional topological field theories. Okay, so that's kind of the context I want to work in, is the studying this four-dimensional topological field theory. I'm going to kind of emphasize the B side. So what is this? So we don't really know a mathematical definition of this as a fully extended topological field theory. We know various pieces of it. But these pieces are the pieces I want to focus on. So what I'd like to do is understand what is the Coulomb branch of this theory. I'd like to understand the moduli space of vacua in this theory. So what do we know about this theory? First of all, we have local operators. So if you look at local operators in this theory, we can describe them. They're not terribly interesting. They're just given by, for example, if I look at the A hat model for this group G, they're given by the local operators in A hat model are given by just the cohomology of the classifying space, or of the G check equivariant cohomology of a point. So they're just invariant polynomials in the Adron scalar. So this again looks like functions on this Cartan modulo Weyl group. So that's my space that keeps appearing. The Cartan mod Weyl group is the spec of this ring of local operators. Okay. So if you'd like, if I'm a topological field theorist and I want to understand what do I mean by moduli space of vacua, if I don't have access to the supersymmetric theory, I just have a topological field theory, my definition of what the moduli space of vacua might be, to just take the moduli space of vacua, is just the space on which local operators are functions. So I'll just take this to be spec of this ring of local operators. And so in this case, I get exactly the space Cartan mod W. Okay? So that's kind of a naive idea of what the 4D Coulomb branch is. But I can get a less naive idea if I keep track not just of local operators, but of line operators. So if we ask what are the, so the next kind of question I can ask is look at line operators. So I think you guys heard a talk about these local operators on Monday, right? From Chris Elliott. So you can explain these also on the B side, and these on the B side, these are exactly the operators that control singular support of coherent sheaves. I want to look at the line operators, and here I'm going to really emphasize the B side perspective. So what are the line operators? The line operators form a category, and that category is, if you'd like, you can think from the point of view of the topological field theory, it's a category attached to a two-sphere, or maybe Kevin likes to call it bubble, I guess. It's a category of quasi-coherent sheaves on the space of fields of the B model on the two-sphere, which are local systems, G local systems, on S2. So you look at the space of flat G bundles on the two-sphere, and you look at sheaves on this space. And now you might complain that the two-sphere is simply connected. So it doesn't have a lot of local systems, but it has enough. What this space of local systems, so there's only one local system, so to speak, but it has both automorphisms and their deformations and self-exts. So this is kind of a derived space. This space is given by a kind of self-intersection of a point in the dual of in the Lie algebra, mod out by the group. That's what this space looks like. But this is a very non-transverse intersection. And when you take this in the derived sense, this gives you something interesting. So if you think about this, so that's what it is as a category. I want to understand the OPE of line operators. So this category also has a multiplication. From this point of view, it's some kind of convolution product. So instead, let me kind of dualize this. It looks like quasi-coherent sheaves on the space little g dual mod g. If I'm being careful, I should remember that this has some kind of grading. It's some graded version of little g dual. But it's sheaves on g dual mod g with tensor product. Okay. So that's a description of the category of line operators in n equals 4 in this twist. And so that gives me a better idea of what the moduli space of vacua kind of really is. Because a moduli space of vacua should be such that these line operators should correspond to just sheaves. In this twist, it's quasi-coherent sheaves on the kind of more true moduli space of vacua. So I want to say, so I can give it, you know, there's a kind of more refined version of the moduli space of vacua, which takes into account line operators, not just local operators. So if you'd like, you have, before we had this kind of naive, let's call it M, which is kind of the naive moduli space of vacua. And over it, let's call it maybe M underline, which is this quotient, G dual mod G. Now, G dual mod G is an interesting stack. This is something which has a bunch of interesting stabilizers. And it maps here with is just remembering just the functions on this space. So remember the functions, you get this space. If you remember the line operators, you get something more interesting. What is this physically saying? This is just keeping track of the fact that when you're at a point of the Coulomb branch, you still have some residual gauge symmetry. So this is just a collection. This is, if you'd like, a family. Here's H star mod W. And at each point in H star mod W, I have some residual gauge symmetry where that group is the group of centralizers. Yeah?
Do you have some reason to, like, you could have continued and told us about the surface operators?
Sure. Absolutely. That's right. So you get better and better ideas of what the moduli space of vacua is as you go into more and more defects.
So I could imagine that you're going to tell us that. I could imagine that you're not just going to because it's too hard to compute. Or I could imagine that you're going to tell us that you have some reason to think that it's going to be like one categorically affine.
I don't know that I have. I think that my knowledge is very limited. I don't have a reason to think that it's one categorically affine. It becomes pretty hard to describe. To do this kind of Tanakian calculation, it becomes hard to do with the two categorical levels. So I'm not claiming that this is the absolute truth. I'm saying that this is a step in the quest, and it's going to be enough for what I want to explain. So yeah, so you could get a more refined version. Yeah.
Themselves that you are saying we should expect to be sheaves on the moduli of vacua?
No, the objects in here. A line operator should be gives you a sheaf on the moduli space of vacua, just like a local operator gives you a function on the moduli space of vacua. So you got the fibers. You have a quantum mechanical, a one-dimensional quantum mechanical system on the moduli of vacua from the line operators, and that's giving the fibers of this. Of this sheaf. Right. I mean, if you'd like, you can think about this that I'm trying to approximate my theory as a sigma model into this moduli space of vacua, and then I'm writing defects. If in that sigma model, I can ask what are various defect operators, and I have functions on one level, and next level I have sheaves, and then some other level I have some sheaves of categories. These are just defects in the sigma model. So I'm realizing my defects in the theory in terms of defects on the moduli space.
The action of the functions on, like, if I want to think of these as modules for the functions, I'm thinking of local operators hitting local
exactly.
operators.
Exactly. Yeah. So if I think so here's my line operator, and if I look at I have local operators. Attaching to a line operator. If you'd like, local operators are just endomorphisms of the trivial line operator. That's just saying functions are endomorphisms of O, of the sheaf of functions. Okay. So this map is a kind of integrable system. This map is a kind of a shifted version of the Cyber-Gwynn integrable system. It's kind of a, if you like, a delooped or categorified version. This is kind of a symplectic, a shifted symplectic space, and this is a Lagrangian fibration. Except that the fibers here now, instead of being groups, they're like classifying spaces of groups. That's the shifting that's happened. Okay, so all right, so that's the context. And we have a theorem which is of one of the theorems, in main theorems we have in the subject is the derived version of the geometric Satake correspondence. Satake, which is a theorem of Bezukhovnikov and Finkelberg. And it identifies, if you'd like, it just identifying of line operators in the A hat model for the dual group and line operators in the B hat model for the group G. So explicitly saying that this category of sheaves on G dual mod G, this graded version, is identified with the Satake category, with what the line operators in the A model, which are these D modules on the affine Grassmannian. D modules on the affine Grassmannian modulo, the positive half of the loop group. Okay, so this gives a description of this category in A side terms, but maybe let me not dwell on that, but in any case, we know the S-duality in this setting, and we're gonna use it. Okay, so that's the. All right, so now that's the setup. So notice that this is very close. This G dual mod G is very close to the space we had before. We had T star of G acting on G dual. This is just the quotient. This is just a different picture, if you'd like, for the same thing. Here I'm giving you the quotient stack. Here I'm giving its presentation as a groupoid. And in fact, you have a stronger statement that this is due to the result of Gates' grade, that if you look at this category of quasi-coherent sheaves that we're looking at, these line operators, it's Morita equivalent to the category, if you like, that has to do with just sheaves on cotangent bundle of G. So there's a kind of direct relation between these two. You can reformulate everything we were saying about T star of G in this language of G dual mod G. So this requires some, it's an easy consequence of a hard theorem of Gates' grade. All right, so that's the setup. So now the next thing, on the other hand, we had this quantum version. So the quantum version comes from looking at this theory in the omega background. So now I could look at, turn on the omega background. So what does this mean for me? I just think of, here's my picture of R4, and maybe here's the axis along which I was putting my line operators. And I don't know, think of that inside some R2, and I'm going to turn on some equivariance for rotation around this axis. So I'm going to study all of the field theory operations I can do working equivariantly for rotations around this circle. So what does it tell me that I can work equivariantly for rotations around the circle? So the equivariant, so the S1, so I just passed to S1 equivariant versions of everything in the field theory, of the entire field theory. This gives me a family. This gives me a family of objects, family of categories, family of rings, kind of a family of theories that live over, that are linear over the equivariant cohomology of a point, which is polynomials in some generator epsilon of degree 2. So we get a deformation. So all the objects that make sense, for example, these line operators, any object that makes sense to look equivariantly at, get a deformation depending on a parameter epsilon. So if I take this category of, so the ring of local operators and the category of line operators have an epsilon deformation, and we know, again, by the same pictures of Bezukhovnikov-Finkelberg, we know exactly what happens to line operators under this deformation, they exactly get quantized. So if I look at the B hat model, if you like, line operators with this epsilon parameter, so these are line operators in the omega background, then this just gives me, I don't know, something that corresponds to, well, it has various names. It's called the category of Harishchandra bimodules. More concretely, what does that mean? That means, if you like, it's modules for the enveloping algebra of G that are equivariant for the group G, just like before we had G dual mod G. We had function of G dual modules, G equivariant. This becomes just G dual becomes UG. Or another way to say this, it's D modules on the group, which are left and right equivariant for G. So just like before, we have something that has to do with the cotangent bundle of the group. Now we have something to do with differential operators on the group. So we've just quantized the cotangent bundle of the group. Okay. Okay. So this is the picture for line operators in the omega background, and the same. So if you'd like, what are the local operators? The local operators. Local operators, we can think about them as now being identified with the center of the enveloping algebra, but it's the same as the same ring we had before. It's the same as functions on H star mod W. It's kind of the same commutative ring, but now I want to think about it now this way. And the same phenomena that we had before, if you look at, if you're now sitting in the omega background, if you're kind of stuck to this axis, if you have a local operator, it can live on the left or on the right of a line defect. And therefore, these line defects are, this category of line defects is not an algebra over local operators. It lives in kind of bimodules. You can have left and right multiplication by local operators. You can have pre and post composition with local operators. And this gives you a bimodule structure. So this is where these Harishchandra bimodules live. OK, so the kind of content of the work with Gunningham, if you like, is describing sort of a commutative symmetry. So this category of line operators in the omega background becomes something kind of non-commutative, and it doesn't live over the center. What we give is a collection of operators, if you like, that are kind of transparent. They can commute with everything. They're in the center of this line operators. So what we're trying to describe is, in some sense, where does this moduli space of vacua of the omega deform theory, where does it actually live over? What is a commutative symmetry it carries? Maybe I don't know if this is worth going into. You can explain. Well, you can explain the. That action is exactly what we're doing, is integrating this Cyber-Gwynne integrable system. In the same way as I was explaining that the NGO action integrates all these Hamiltonian systems and Hamiltonian reductions, you can take this integrable system and you give a, maybe let me just say that precisely, giving this NGO action is, I don't, maybe that gets too technical, but anyway, claiming that giving this central action that we're giving is exactly giving an action of some family of abelian groups on this integrable system, which is integrating the flows. And moreover, there's a purely gauge theoretic construction of this integration. But maybe before, rather than going into that, how long are these talks supposed to be?
Already been sleeping out.
Okay. Yeah, so let me yeah.
When you look at a four dimensional case, does it get closer to what NGO was doing?
Yeah, so you can reconstruct the NGO. The NGO construction and its quantization they follow from consideration. So what I want to claim is that this the NGO construction is equivalent to the following thing. So I set it as the central action, but it's the NGO action, the action of this J on these centralizers is equivalent to this, actually how NGO says it. There's an action of something, let me write something called bj on gdual mod g. So what is bj? It's the classifying stack. So here's Cartan mod w, and instead of looking at the family of abelian groups, I look at their family of classifying spaces. Okay. Now, so the in-go action is equivalent to saying that the Coulomb branch of n equals 4 carries an action of a group, which is this group. So bj is a group because j is commutative. So j is a commutative group, bj is again a group, and bj acts on g dual mod j. That's exactly acts integrating these flows. So you have this kind of shifted symplectic integrable system, and there's a group action that integrates these flows. Bj, I claim, is the moduli space of vacua of another topological gauge theory. We had some discussion which one is it. I believe it's n equals 4 in the Donaldson-Witten twist, but in any case, there's some topological field theory for which this is the moduli space of vacua. And I can explain our math proof, it's very easy, but I think the physics interpretation of the proof is saying that the entire n equals 4 theory in this twist is acted on by another theory.
There are no elliptic vibrations here.
There are no elliptic vibrations, no, that's right. Maybe there's a physical version of this. I'm seeing everything in the level of this topological field theory. So the moduli space, I'm seeing some particular shadow of the moduli space of vacua. This action is a kind of a delooped version or a four-dimensional lift. There's something simpler you can do in three dimensions, which follows from this, but there's a simpler thing in three dimensions, which is J itself, which is the moduli, the Coulomb branch of pure n equals 4 in 3D, pure 3D n equals 4, acts on the Coulomb branch, on the Coulomb branch of any n equals 4 gauge theory. And in fact, it's not just a statement about the Coulomb branches themselves. This field theory itself is kind of an algebra object in field theories, and it acts on these field theories. So I'll just draw there some picture. Okay, this picture might not make sense to people, but anyway, if you have a field theory Z, you have a 3D field theory that you're trying to gauge. To gauge a 3D theory is to put it on an interval in one dimension higher with a Neumann boundary condition for a gauge theory. So a gauged theory, this is what compactifies to a gauged theory. Whenever you have a theory that's gauged, it carries an action of another theory, which is what you gauge from gauging a trivial theory, this Neumann-Neumann condition. And that's a kind of a pure gauge theory of that dimension. So the claim is that the actual gauged theories all carry action of the pure gauge theory. And that's where this integrable system comes from. The claim is this is a 4D version of that, that the moduli space of this theory is carrying an action of some other theory. And because you're saying it in 4D, it persists through omega background. I can put both of these guys in omega background, and that's our theorem. That's the non-commutative version. So both the commutative and both n-go and its quantization are just follow from this action of field theories. yeah. So bj is, I mean, this is kind of pure wishful thinking. I mean, if there was it would be Neumann-Neumann for some five-dimensional theory, if that makes sense, right? I mean, this is a four-dimensional, yeah, that's right. But I'm not quite sure about the existence of this 4D theory that I'm trying to use, so let me not try to say it five-dimensional yet.
Somehow the n equals 4 sort of seems like it would be
one. Well, it depends who you're starting with, and I think it's going to be sensitive to which twist you're looking at. So this category, I can say, this bj has a simpler description. What is this bj? I can tell you what I don't know what this theory is, but I tell you what the line operators in it are. Bj, so line operators in this theory, which are sheaves on bj. Sheaves on bj just means representations of j. And representations of j are the same thing as homology, equivariant homology of the Grassmannian co-module. So you were asking before about line operators. So before I was looking at modules. Now I'm looking at co-modules, so it's a little off. But anyway, this is some version of equivariant local systems on the Grassmannian. So I want a four-dimensional theory, or if you'd like, equivariant local, just local systems on the space of maps from S2 to BG. So this gives you a hint of what kind of theory I want. theory where where its line operators are going to be local systems on space of maps from S2 to BG. So that's my what this should be a moduli space for. And then line operators on that. But once you have such a thing, it's easy to see that these guys act on line operators in pure in n equals 4.
Another four-dimensional version mm-hmm. would have been the three-dimensional version, so it would be theoretic.
That's right. I mean, you know, but this should be strictly stronger, right? I'm giving you a statement in four-dimensional space, and then I can reduce it on circles of various kinds. So, I mean, it'll imply a k-theoretic version of this action, right? I mean, this k-theoretic version of this kind of integration, you know, the four-dimensional statement should be strictly stronger.
Yeah, but in terms of if it's stronger or just orthogonal. The picture there was in three dimension was an interface between 3D and mm-hmm. 4 theories.
Mm-hmm.
I can think of an interface between 4D and 2 theories,
mm-hmm.
which has similar nature.
Right.
But
right. Okay. I can't evaluate. Right. But okay. So I don't know. So there's several more things one could say. One could say how this. I'll just say that you can see from this picture about the 4D, the kind of statement that I was saying before about quantum Hamiltonian spaces, and that's sort of a simple consequence of that. That's basically studying surface operators in this 4D theory, and maybe. Let me just say some one line or three line version of the proof because it's very simple. Let me just make a silly math statement. Let me make the following kind of simple statement. Suppose I have space X, and I think for you might as well think of X as being a finite set, or if you'd like. But suppose I have a space X and a groupoid acting on that set. So again, the example you maybe want to have is X is a point and the groupoid is just G. Finite group, say. So, what can you do in this setup? I'm going to define two things. First, let me call the Hecke algebra, or let's look at the homology. Well, if you think of this as a finite set, this just means if you'd like measures or distributions on this finite set. Look at the homology of G. This is an associative algebra with convolution. This is just the groupoid algebra. So, in the case here, this would just be that the group algebra of your group. The other thing you could do is you could look at some category of sheaves on the groupoid with convolution. So here would be like, you know, like vector bundles on the group G with convolution. So this is what you might call the Hecke category. And let me just make the following silly observation, is that if you look at so this algebra is non-commutative, right? This algebra has to do with, it's non-commutative whenever the group's non-commutative. Just want to make the observation that this, if I look at modules for this algebra, the claim is that the category of modules for this algebra is commutative, is symmetric monoidal, is symmetric monoidal. Now, what is this category of modules? This is just what you would call sheaves on X that are equivariant for the groupoid. That's what the Hecke algebra is saying. It's just giving encoding equivariance. And equivariant sheaves have a tensor product, which is a commutative tensor product. So that's why it's symmetric monoidal. And the next claim is that this category, the symmetric monoidal category, naturally maps to the center of the Hecke category. What is this saying? This is just saying that the convolution on G is linear with respect to equivariant things. Pre and post-composing with equivariant things is the same. Or if you'd like, maybe easier, is if you take the quotient by the groupoid, this category is just trying to be sheaves on Y, and the convolution in G is linear over Y. It doesn't change things on Y. So that's why you have a symmetric monoidal category with an action on as the center. If you apply it to G is the Grassmannian, affine Grassmannian mod G, which is a groupoid of this kind, that gives you the main theorem. So it's a kind of a two-line proof. But, OK. Thanks.
Do you see the context in which Ngo used his results as well?
That's just looking at maps from a Riemann surface into this 4D Coulomb branch, right? So he's looking at geometric Langlands setting. So you have a moduli space of Higgs bundles, mm-hmm. and a Higgs bundle is just a twisted map to G dual mod G. And so Ngo said, well, you look at the moduli space of Higgs bundles. You look at it over the Hitchin base, which is maps to H mod W, there's a family of abelian groups, which are just a pullback of J, or torsor for J, and Ngo says, so there's an abelian group acting on the Hitchin fibers. So of course, generically, the Hitchin fibers look like groups, and it's just that group. But Ngo pointed out that there, over the entire Hitchin base, there's a family of abelian groups, of the equidimensional, a flat family of abelian groups acting on the Hitchin fibers, and then you look at the action on the cohomology. So I mean, his context it literally is doing a n equals 4 on surface cross S1. I mean, he's interested in the cohomology of moduli space of Hitchin system. So you literally do this n equals 4 on surface cross S1, and you get some symmetries, the maps from sigma into cohomology of maps from sigma into Bj, which is his group scheme acts on the cohomology of the Hitchin fibration. And then you can do an S-duality and describe that, and that's what the endoscopic groups give you. So I mean, the endoscopic decomposition, the fundamental lemma, is just S-duality on that. So I mean, this is the context he was doing it. What would be more awesome is if you could do the quantization. So the quantization of the Hitchin system, that's of course what geometric Langlands is somehow about. The quantization is not given by maps into the quantization of the base. So you can't quantize G dual mod G and look at just maps into that. But one thing, but this theorem we proved that this Whitaker-Hecke category is symmetric monoidal. That's a finite group version of one of the main conjectures in local geometric Langlands. One of the main conjectures is if you do this for the loop group, if you do the Whitaker-Hecke category for the loop group, that's exactly Langlands. This is a conjecture of Gates-Gray. That's how local geometric Langlands is supposed to work. If you look at the Whitaker-Hecke category of the loop group, it's supposed to be equivalent to quasi-coherent sheaves on G-dual local systems on the punctured disk. So that's in local geometric Langlands, right? Local geometric Langlands is saying that some result by categories with a loop group action are supposed to be something like sheaves of categories over local systems on the punctured disk. That's some version of local geometric Langlands, which again is just S-duality on the circle. So if you look at the S-duality on the circle, you can ask, how are you going to get started? And the answer is, well, if I give you a loop group category, I take its Whitaker object, and that gives me a module for this Whitaker-Hecke category of the loop group, which is now, so here we're doing kind of a finite version. We did the finite Whitaker-Hecke category, and we proved it's symmetric monoidal. So here it's completely unclear why it's symmetric monoidal. So in our picture, it's kind of manifestly obvious from Langlands duality, somehow from this S duality. But here, it's not at all clear. And then instead of getting local systems on the punctured disk, we get this torus mod W, which is some kind of shadow of that. So it's some kind of shadow of, so that's what you'd hope to get by quantizing. So the quantization of the Ngo picture, it would be something of this flavor, but that's obviously much, we're not claiming that techniques will give something like that, but.
I wonder if it's to case taken that the Coulomb branch, for a measure of the pattern of the circle, mm-hmm. has an action of the Coulomb branch of the pure of the PhD of the pattern of the circle.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if this is supposed to happen in the compass patch of I, like the generic compass patch.
That should be, I mean,
that you should think about elliptic stuff over stuff.
I mean, right. I mean, I can't get this straight in my head, but this 4D picture and the 3D picture should be roughly, you know.
But I don't know if it's the same 4D as what the other.
I'm only looking at a topologically twisted, a particular topologically twisted theory.
I want to put the fundamental H theory.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And then, model specific bundles can be seen as GH theory, something with a very strange matter content.
Mm-hmm.
It should actually move G times G times G, G to the power of 2G minus 2.
Oh, I see. Right.
I'm not sure.
Right. I'm not sure. Another thing I think that should be pretty clear from thinking about this clear-headedly, is the kind of so I watched a video from this room a few weeks ago of Ginsburg's about these Sicilian theories, the Higgs branches of class S theories. And the answer that they seem to be indicating about the Higgs branches of class S theories is exactly given by maps from Riemann surface into BJ. So I mean, I think that into this BJ. I mean, if you look at the answer, they didn't quite say that. They said that something for end punctured sphere, but everything there was being done, he called it A instead of J. But you're getting everything is described in terms of Hamiltonian reduction, not for G, but for J. So the gluing operation was somehow, there's kind of an adjunct. And so I think this is telling you something about the Higgs branch of class S theories are roughly, I mean, I think that it's given roughly by in terms of maps from sigma into BJ. It's much less space of kind of J bundles on sigma. It's I don't know if that's exactly right, but it's something very close to that. So I think, and that should also somehow be clear from this picture. So that's about the, at least it's the same appearance of this BJ. I believe. I mean, again, it's coming from the fact that you have a class S theory with a puncture. You're getting this global symmetry of G, and that's where this on the other side of duality that comes from this J action. But I don't know. I'd like to. I was hoping to have something to say about that, but I don't.
Other questions? No,
thanks.
Thank you.